Okay, well, we're back on again, and just chatting with PMH Atwater, my guest, about how the energies are in full tilt. Got a feeling 8808, which is upon us, might have something to do with that. At any rate, that's my explanation for why we've gotten off to a late start. We had a little interruption, but here we are back. You're with Patricia Corey, Beyond the Matrix. Welcome to the show today. And as I've already introduced her, I'll just speak briefly about my wonderful guest, PMH Atwater. She's a distinguished researcher on near-death experiences. She's a spiritual counselor, a real visionary. She's the author of 7 books. Some of these are Coming Back to Life, Future Memory, We Live Forever, The New Children, and Near-Death Experiences. And the one that I'm quite interested in tonight, my time, Rome, Beyond the Indigo Children, which we'll be talking about. So before we get on with the program, let me just start by saying, how are you there, PMH?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, great.
I managed to survive.
Yeah.
I've had all kinds of breakdowns on this end, too.
Well, you know, there's no greater success than overcoming challenge.
Right. Yeah, well, our car broke down, and then just now the air conditioner broke down, and then our hot water heater broke down, and it's just like boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, well, you know, these energies are very powerful. How many times have I, in my work with the Syrians, seen almost every electrodomestic instrument go out? So it must mean we're in the energy zone.
Well, we are, especially with the planet Pluto, if you know very much about that. Solar eclipse that we had is one of the most powerful that we've ever had. And then followed by other increasing energies, and of course the big 888, which is why China scheduled the Olympics in Beijing.
Yeah, well, that doesn't have anything to do with your book, but I'd love to just tap into that for a minute and talk about your take on 888, because I've just come back from the crop circles you may have heard me announce, and
yeah.
There's going to be quite a hanging out tonight. Welcoming in 8808, and the croppies are hoping they're going to catch something in process. So,
energy is jumping, and anything that can't take it is breaking.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I've seen a few people are starting to lose their equilibrium, to put it mildly, too. We are really, really gearing up now. Spinning in, as I say.
Yes, and especially with our new children, which is the book I wrote, Beyond the
which
Indigo
is the
Children. Let's get
again,
beyond
those labels. Let me just announce you once more. This is PMH Atwater, and the book tonight we're talking about is Beyond the Indigo Children, the New Children, and the Coming of the Fifth World. So, much has been said about indigos. My own book talks about the violet oversoul, and I think what we should do to bring it into focus is to start by your explanation of what you believe are the indigo children.
Well, the first thing I want to say here is that I want to invite everybody not to use labels. That may help in some types of understanding, but it does not help our children. It does not help the parents. It does not help the school teachers or really anybody else. So what
I'm glad to hear that.
What I'm inviting
people
to do.
I'm glad to hear that because suddenly there seems to be a lot of ego surrounding the "I have an indigo child" syndrome.
There's a lot of backlash, and that backlash is warranted. So if you take all of these labels, indigo, crystal, starseed, transitional, cosmic, and so forth and so on, toss them all. Toss every single one of them. Then take all of the characteristics each label was supposedly describing. Take all of those characteristics and bunch them together. And then you have the profile of our new children. These children are unlike any other children we have of record. And so I'm looking at it as a field worker. I'm looking at the science. I'm looking at the social construct, what's really happening in our schools, what's really happening with these children. And I'm saying we need to sort of back off here and really look at what we're doing when we're trying to categorize children. We're not helping them. So if we really look at the kids themselves, their assets and their liabilities, talents and weaknesses, what they're facing, what they're bringing in with them, and then a really serious problem that's beginning to develop now because of technology, and I really want to discuss that. So let's just get into it. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's just talk about what these characteristics are when you speak about the new children avoiding the labels, which I am completely in agreement on.
Bless you.
As you said, you've got an idea. Say what?
I'm saying bless you.
Well, I see, you know, I think one of the most repetitive or the most focal points of all of my teaching is, you know, abandoning the ego. So here we have it playing out now with children and parents of these children. And, you know, it's a real heavy burden for a child to have to live up to the title of Indigo. And I think that it also creates a lot of fantasy that is not based on
reality. Yes, it does. And a lot of the claims that are being made are exaggerated, Patricia. They just don't fit the field at all. So
it's a pity to be transferring our own ego-centered consciousness to the children. So this is one of the reasons why I wanted you on, because I need to have someone who's very balanced and very knowledgeable talk about the effects, the aspects, the whole phenomenon, and how people can get this into focus a little bit better and do and honor the children.
Okay, I'm really pleased to hear that. So
we're in sync.
Oh, we sure are. I could just hug you, and I am anyway.
Okay. Well, thank you. This is good. All right, so let's talk about...
Let's just climb into this right now when we're talking about children's talents. These kids are very intelligent. I don't care if they're flunking in school and can't spell. These kids are clever. They're intelligent. About one-third of them are geniuses. I'll talk about the intelligent stuff later. They're very music-oriented. They are clever innovators and inventors. They're very creative. They're very intuitive, psychic. Many of them remember past lives. In fact, most of them do. They're excellent with math. They're natural healers. They're natural-born entrepreneurs. They are almost totally irreverent. They don't look at things like we do at all. They're creative problem solvers. They're very volunteer-minded in humanitarian projects of all kinds. They're groupies. Their greatest talent of all is their ability to abstract. These kids come in, even at the age of maybe one or two, when they're just starting to talk, point, or, you know, do things, they're abstracting already. And a lot of people say, "Oh, gee, look at the wisdom of these kids." Well, it really isn't wisdom. Wisdom takes time, really, to integrate and understand. What these kids have is the ability to abstract. That is to say, most of us talk about, you know, thinking outside the box. Well, for these kids, there was never any box there to begin with. Now, when I'm talking about abstracting, I'm talking about the ability to conceptualize. Let me give you two examples so that everybody will, you know, be on the same page when I'm talking about the ability to abstract. One example, this is a child 2.5 years old speaking fluently. She and her mother are having a conversation. And by the way, these children are very impatient. And she gets very impatient, very frustrated, puts her hands on her hips and walks up to her mom and just says right into her mom's face, "I don't know the word for that yet." Now, what little 2.5-year-old can recognize that they don't know the word that they need to use at that moment?
Yes.
I mean, that's fantastic. Let me give you another one.
Fantastic.
This is from my research with near-death kids. This is a six-year-old, first grade. He's in the state of Georgia in the United States. He drowns about halfway through the school year. They were able to resuscitate him. When he was well enough to get back into school, now, you know, I'm talking here in terms of what we have in America in the way of curriculums, and what we have over here in the first grade are little books like Sea Spot Run, Dick mm-hmm. and Jane. So that's first grade material here. So they put him back into the first grade. Mind you, this child is now reading Greek mythology. He goes up to his teacher, and he says to her, "Why was the book Robinson Crusoe ever written?" So they had to take him out of the first grade and put him in with special learners. And all of this happened overnight because of his near-death experience. Now, that's
another
topic.
Well, thank God they didn't put him on Ritalin and consider him an ADHD.
Well, that's what they do with a lot of near-death kids. That's what they're doing with a lot of our new kids. Now, I want to talk about a little bit of their liabilities or their weaknesses, and then I really want to talk about intelligence because that's such a biggie. Well, all of them are. And one of the things you'll find in the book Beyond the Indigo Children is there's a separate chapter for everything. You know, their psychic abilities, their entrepreneurship, their anger, all of this, separate chapters, and lots of resources and ideas, name, address, phone number. I'm very specific. Anyway,
the book is full of resource information, which is really handy.
Absolutely.
And before you start talking about that,
and a lot more on my
website. Before you start talking about that, I'm just going to give out my email address. If you've got questions for PMH Atwater, you can email them to me. I'm online at patcorey@tiscali.it. Or you can call in later in the hour. I'll give you a sign when you can call in by checking the call-in lines on BBS Radio and see if you can have some live questions with her. Okay, before you start identifying those aspects, could you give us your website for people to contact you?
It's www.pmh, so that's P as in Paul, M as in Marie, H as in Howard. So it's www.pmhatwater, just at men water,
.com.
In other words,
okay,
it's my name, .com. My name is PMH. So it's pmhatwater.com. You want to get on that section of my website that is entitled Beyond the Indigo Children Extras. There's about 30 to 40 pages there, the addendum to the book, that has more of the science, more of the ideas, more research, more material. It's a free download. So people can get into that free and, you know, learn even more.
Great. All right, let's go on now, and you were going to talk to us about, I've lost my chain of thought. Where were you
I was going to talk about some of the weaknesses, but I'm kind of wondering if I should stick with the intelligence angle here a little bit longer.
Yeah, I'd like to hear about
that. We don't lose that because it's so important to say. And this weekend, we can track, we can verify with science. There are two genes that they call build a better brain gene. So these are build a better brain gene. So almost like a tongue tie. But these genes that build better brains have been around for a while. But all of a sudden, just within the last couple of decades, about the last three decades, about the last two decades, these genes have been jumping in the worldwide population. Science today estimates that 70% of the world's population has at least one of these. 30% has both of them. Now, hang a little bit here on that idea of one-third. about 8 years ago, give or take, the various educators throughout the world who use the standard IQ test. So any country throughout the world that uses the standard IQ test to measure a child's intelligence, they have noted that there's been a sudden jump in children's intelligence worldwide between 24 to 26 points. And this jump is so sudden that there's no way it can be connected to genetics or to, that is to say, family and the family history, or to nutrition, feeding the children better, to better parenting, to better schooling. In fact, this jump is so unusual that it has a glitch in it, and that glitch is that the biggest jump from 24 to 26 points is in what we call, what I would call creative problem solving, or sort of like a fluid intelligence. It's a little bit different. Now, some of the educators or various schools everywhere will say, well, 134 to 136 is genius. And the other educators will say, no, it's 140. That's the score for genius. Well, this one-third worldwide, these kids are testing out at 150 to 160. They're smarter than the geniuses of old. Many of them are going to get to the 200s.
I'd like to interject something here because my own work has to do with activating DNA. And there is a growing awareness of activating more DNA filaments as part of our process as we go through this enormous shift. Now, proposal. Can you consider that it's possible these children are coming in with more, let's say, in my case, I'm interested in a third strand of DNA?
Well, I don't know if they have
a possibility that this is happening. I can't hear you. We're talking at the same time here.
I can't say that they have a third strand of DNA because I'm not that familiar with the different coils and, swirls of DNA. But
well, it's interesting, though, that...
Well, I could certainly say...
If you're talking about genes and a surge and out of nowhere, in essence, it's interesting that this does correlate...
Correlate with genes. Yes, it does. And
very interesting.
It's just happening all over. It's not something we are causing per se by our choice necessarily, although
necessarily.
That might be true with some people, but it is just simply happening, which I choose to believe is part of a greater plan, but I can't
so
say that as a researcher.
Well, you can say it on Beyond the Matrix.
Well, I do have to watch my reputation, dear, a little bit.
We won't let you lose your good reputation, but you can get out of, researcher mode a little bit here, and everybody will love you for it.
Well, these kids are absolutely wild. These are quirky kids. They're not like any other children you've ever been around. Like I said before, these are quick, click kids. They feel entitled. They want everything to come to them. They're impatient. They're like the world's best consumer. There's an underlying anger in this generation of children. It's an energy signature. And this anger that they're bringing in with them is a peculiar kind of anger. It's not necessarily what we would, normally call anger or rage. What it is a complete frustration and impatience with anything that is exaggerated or inauthentic. And if they run into that, they fight it, or they'll block it, or they don't want anything to do with it, or they'll backtalk you, or they'll fight you. They just won't.
Okay, but let me play the devil's advocate here for a minute. Would you agree that some of these behaviors that you're describing are, let's say, product of a very, very permissive society?
Well, it might be, but I would rather say, based on the research, and especially the genes and the body form itself, the personality itself, when you're looking at energy signatures of the various generations, they're bringing this in with them. This is the timing. This is the energy that they're coming in with. So certainly the way the world is now today affects that, of course. But what they're bringing in with them also affects it. So I think it's sort of like, you know, both sides of the equation here. And perhaps they're choosing as a soul wave, if you want to use those kind of terms, to come into these kinds of energies in specifically this kind of way.
Okay, here's another question for you. When you're working with these children, are you also doing a little bit of a let's say, I don't want to say analysis, but are you, how can I find the right word here? Are you considering the energy of the parents and their views?
Oh, yes.
And their...
Oh, of course. Of course.
Okay, are you finding any
patterns
in that?
This is... Yes, I am looking at that. But as a researcher, I'm taking this broader look because that's my job. My job is not to train parents. My job is not to train school teachers. My job is to inspire teachers and parents with what we're seeing globally with these children and in various countries with these children. So
right,
I'm just
but I'm not suggesting that you would be training the parents. I'm asking, the question that I'm asking you is, do you see any patterns? In other words, or is there a prototype or an archetypal parent to whom these indigos decide to be birthed?
Well, the new kids, Joseph Chilton Pierce, the really great speaker and presenter of child development theories and facts and this kind of thing, he fully believes there is a type of parent. Those that are more spiritual, those that are more open, those that eat better, those that are in a better place in their own self-discovery and their own self-realization. He's convinced that these type of people bring in more of a more advanced or accelerated version of the new kids. He's convinced of that, and he writes about it in his book, The Biology of Transcendence. However, one of the things I have found is even in families that don't match that at all, mothers that don't match that at all, in fact, are quite in the reverse, can also bring in these types of children. Where this really hangs, and it's really unusual, where this really hangs on what really enables these children to come in and develop is the perception of safety. Just that, Patricia. The perception of safety. That's what enables the child as it's forming in the mother's womb. That's what enables the brain of that child to automatically switch. If the mother and the child feel safe, then the child will automatically switch toward higher brain development and the development of the prefrontal lobes, which are the wings of the brain. It's the highest and best development in the human family. That's where we have judgment, morals, empathy, you know, compassion, well-being. But if the mother and especially the child do not feel safe, remember DNA talks to each other. DNA talks to the entire environment. It's talking to other people around it and other life forms around it. What we know now is DNA is always talking to each other. It's always communicating.
That's right.
So we've got this little brain in there and all that DNA, and it's talking and looking around the entire environment. And if it feels threatened, if it does not feel safe, then the brain will automatically begin to develop the reptilian brain or the survival brain. So it will go one way or another, all because of the perception of safety. I would have thought it would have been something else, but it's not. It's just that simple and just that basic.
And how do you acquire this information? Do you have children telling you this on a conscious level?
Well, certainly you can do that. But mostly for myself, I'm working with doctors, I'm working with physicians, I'm working with scientists, I'm doing all of that. And then, of course, when nobody's looking, you said I could say things on the show that I normally never say.
Yes!
I simply look. I have the ability to see through things.
Oh, great.
And I just simply
That's
look.
What I was trying to get to.
Patricia, I'm not allowed to say that.
Oh, that's a pretty scientific...
First time I've ever admitted that. Erase it from your memory.
Well, it's just gone out on the radio. But I want you to know that I have a reputation for drawing these things out of my guests, and I'm very honored to do that.
Well, bear in mind, dear, that I'm a near-death experiencer also. I had three of them in 3 months in 1970.
Wow, let's talk about that.
Did it ever change me?
Three months
in 1977. I look back at it, and I call it the heavenly sledgehammer effect. You know, if they can't get through with one, you just keep pounding.
Well, whatever it was, did you get the point by the third time?
Yes, I finally got the point.
Wow, that's heavy duty. What was that like?
We have to talk about that on another show. If people want to...
You're coming back.
Well, in my book, Coming Back to Life, which is just out a month ago, it's a redo of my original book. In chapter 2, I talk about my own experience, and I don't give the full experience. In future memory... I talk about some of what I witnessed when I was at the center point of creation. So those are all different stories. Meanwhile,
okay, well,
we are here talking about children.
Yes, we are. We are definitely talking about children and your book, Beyond the Indigo Children.
Oops, now, I want to say something at this point before we get distracted. Because it's so important. Remember when I was talking about what I truly feel through science, through research, through really studying these children, is that their greatest asset, their greatest talent, their greatest ability is their ability to abstract.
Right.
That's an ability that we need, we positively need in this world today. We've got to have that ability. That's why they're here, because they can see through things and figure out better and different ways of doing things. Okay, hold that in your mind, the ability to abstract. Their greatest ability, our greatest need from them. What we're finding now in the latest research from schools, especially in England but all over the world, is by the age of puberty, which is about, let's say, 9 to 10, maybe up to 13, so we're talking puberty. 50% of the kids are losing their ability to abstract.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me.
By puberty.
The figure is that low.
By puberty, about 50% are losing the ability to abstract. And do you know what
the
cause is?
Well, sure, they're glued to the screen.
That's part of it.
I think it's a big part. I mean, they're glued to the screen.
It is
everything
a big
is...
part. But it's
more robotic.
Than that. It's any form of virtual reality. So we're talking cell phones. We're talking iPhones. We're talking Game Boys. We're talking videos, computers, television. Any form of virtual reality. Doesn't matter what it is.
Can I interject a personal experience here?
Sure.
Well, my little nephew years ago... my brother is a video game junkie, and these kids have got just the most extreme, up-to-date, latest minute virtual game ever created. And I, Aunt Pat, coming from Italy, bought him this tonka, what are they called? The little bits that you put together.
Hello? Oh, yeah. Those little wonderful little toys. Yeah.
Legos or something?
Lego blocks and these kinds of things.
Lego blocks. Okay. This child was perplexed because, first of all, this was such an unusual thing to give a high-tech 21st century kid. And my brother laughed out loud when I gave it to him. But when he looked at me and he said, what do you want me to do with this, Aunt Pat? And I said, well, you can do anything you want. You can make anything you want. And I sat him down, and even though he had just gotten, you know, Darth Vader kills or whatever the game was, he sat down with me and we built a little village and we built a car. And he was absolutely in his cups. And my point of this story is that it's also got to do with the fact that there's no outlet for these kids anymore. These games are disappearing and being replaced by all of this robotic virtual stuff.
And even more serious than that.
These toys are building personalities, building the creative ability.
I'm glad you gave that example. It's even worse than that because virtual realities directly interfere with brain development. You cannot allow a child up to the age of 2 to be exposed to this at all. After that, just in small portions, you really have to limit usage until they're into puberty. And then they can start handling more of it without it damaging the brain. What is happening now in the schools is that we are turning out educated idiots. These kids are really smart. They know a lot of stuff, but they can't think their way or reason their way out of the simplest things. So that they're losing that. And I really want people to be aware of that. To, you know, all of these inventions and this technology is wonderful. It has good uses, but it has limits, and especially with children. What I'm noticing here in the United States is in kindergarten, they are starting to teach classes on computer use to the little kids in kindergarten.
Oh, God.
And it is part of the public school system. And
yeah, I think there could be some real, you know, I don't want to say sinister, but I do think that there appears to be a deliberate dumbing down of the children.
I think it's a dumbing down of the children because we supposedly don't have the time, we don't have the resources, we don't have the money to spend with them and work with them. All these incredible kids need is a good mentor. Someone to show them what to do and show them how to reason, and they just take off. They've got the brain for it. They
right,
just need
so
to
much
be
easier
mentored.
To...
They need to be
yeah.
mentored.
Parents!
And they're not
they need
getting
to be
it.
Parents that have the time to play with those simple tools and help them discover these things without plunking them down in front of video games and computers
right.
And it's an awesome problem for parents too because as you said it's being forced on them even in the school.
If parents want resources, if they want the latest and best work on this subject, they want to buy the book Distracted, and it is by Maggie Jackson, and it just came out just recently. And it has the very latest research on this. It's fabulous on multitasking and, you know, brain development, all these, what we're now finding with these children. So, and for those children, especially if they have anything to do with autism or the autism spectrum, I'm saying please to parents, please, 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 take your kids back to that educator and request the Raven's IQ test instead of the Wechsler. The Wechsler test, and I don't know that I'm pronouncing it right, but I'm close. the Wechsler IQ test is what most schools use for most kids. Go back and have them take the Ravens IQ test. It's also a valid test. What the Wechsler does is it tests kids for crystallized intelligence. In other words, what we've learned. The Ravens test tests for fluid intelligence, what we can learn. And what they've discovered now with especially the autistic children that are taking the Ravens test is that one third of them are testing out as geniuses.
Okay, let me interject the question here because I find this huge increase in autism very alarming. And from your wisdom and training as a researcher, can you share with us some insights as to are you reaching any conclusions about why we're seeing this huge leap in autism in the children now?
Well, just the whole spectrum. 2 out of every 5 have a learning disorder, at least in the United States. 1 out of 10 are mentally ill. Over 7 million have ADD. Cases of ADHD are up 600% since 1990. Autism spectrum is now so pervasive it's considered an epidemic. Well, what I'm seeing here is that we are harvesting what we have done. We're the ones who have erected all these fires. We have these environments that are not safe. Even our foodstuff. You know, the new kids are very, very sensitive to foods, far more than the others. And they do not assimilate well. There's a lot of problems here with nutrition. So I'm really advising everybody to have their, there might be a problem with the child's learning ability. First thing you do is go in and have them tested for allergies and food. So I think a lot of this is coming from mercury as a preservative. I think a lot of it is coming from improper nutrition for them, and you have to test each one out separately because they're all different. A lot of it's coming from high-tension power lines that we have around our homes and apartments. A lot of it is coming from the signage, the electric signage that we have, the kinds of electrical things we have inside of our home, that we overload.
And the cell phone towers, which also can be transmitters. We never really sure what exactly they could be transmitting out.
And all of that you see is adding up to a huge package. The way that we raise our food now in the fields and the kind of sprays and the kind of seeds that the farmers use. All of this is adding up to the fact that today, every child, I don't care where this child is, I don't care how pure their parents have been eating, every child on the planet is now born with a body burden of toxic chemicals. There is no exceptions that we know of.
I can say that even when I was in Tibet years ago, there was a cloud, a thick layer of smog
up
there.
Yeah, it's everywhere. It's in the air.
Yeah.
So the way we work with it, I believe, is to do the best we can, be alert, but be in that prayer space and be in that touching space and in that hugging space because, you know, love is a great healer. It's just a great healer. And so is talking. So is laughing. So is doing things with each other and having that intimate relationship with each other. And that goes a long way in helping our children, mending and healing our children. But I want to throw out something here that I hope helps everybody to think a little bit differently about, woe is me, all these learning disorders. And, you know, the kids themselves call themselves reordered, not disordered. And they call themselves quirky kids, not, you know, liabilities of any kind. But, you know, let me make this point. And I'm going to tell a little story. I'm going to tell it as fast as I can. it takes place 45 years.
Okay, but before you tell the story, I want to give out the call for in numbers for listeners. Shall we do that first?
Sure.
Okay, hold that thought. If you'd like to talk to PM Atwater and have something to ask her, you can call in on the toll-free line, and that is 877-876-5227. That's for the USA. I'll give it to you again. 877-876-5227. Or you can send in an email to me at patcorey@tiscali.it. Okay. PMH. Go ahead.
PMH. A lot of this is in the book Beyond the Light, or in the addendum to the book that's on my website, which is Beyond the Indigo, excuse me, not Beyond the Light, Beyond the Indigo Children. I have another book that's called Beyond the Light.
Yeah, you were confusing me now. Come on.
So Beyond the Indigo Children, and then on my website is Beyond the Indigo Children Extras. So this is a quick little story that is a real showstopper. 40,000 years ago, the human race was faced with what biologists call a crash. That is to say, extinction. It was because of weather changes and a lot of other kinds of things, and the human race was about to be wiped out. When up jumped a particular gene in the human race, very suddenly, that saved the human race. Now, Mother Nature always takes care of her own, and if she feels that something is needed, she can provide that very, very quickly. It doesn't have to take a long time. She can do it very quickly.
Oh,
she's
showing us that.
So this is what happened. This gene popped up that did not exist at all in the human family before 40,000 years ago. Jumped up in the family, saved the human race. Then it became quiescent. The only times it jumps in the human race at all is if we need it. If there's a lot of die-off from wars or more weather problems or starvation or whatever, then it jumps up again. If it's needed to save or help the human race, it jumps up again. It has never peaked. Wait a minute. It's never peaked as high as it did 40,000 years ago until now. Remember I said in 1990? Cases of ADHD jumped 600%.
Right.
Guess what that gene is? It's ADHD. You and I and everyone else on this planet would not be alive today if it were not for ADHD.
I don't believe that there is such a thing as ADHD, so I'm not sure I agree with you on this.
Well, that
I think it's a manufactured syndrome.
That kind of genetic coding that produces or seems to produce those characteristics of ADHD, that kind of coding. And I can give you the coding. It's DR, let's see, DRD47RLA. It's called the Edison gene.
Oh, well, that helps a lot. Thank you.
I mean, it really is real. And that's what saved us. Now, what I'll say to you, Patricia, is, you know, does Mother Nature know something we don't?
Your ability to roll that code off to me was just grand.
Well, listen, it's in my book, you know. If you want the details and the references, it's in my book. But,
yeah,
you know,
no, we'll go to the book for the... For the details.
But does Mother Nature know something we
here.
Do? We do not.
So
you
do believe that ADHD is a real syndrome?
That gene coding around what we call ADHD is real. It is...
Okay.
It is a real gene, and it really did save the human race.
And that's in the book?
Yes.
That sounds like something that people are going to want to read. The book, again, is Beyond... Oops! My show is called Beyond the Matrix. And as soon as I say Beyond...
Yeah, everything is Beyond this morning. Or tonight. Beyond the Indigo Children.
beyond indigo children, a book you're going to want to get, especially if you're a parent and you are dealing with or discovering the qualities in your child that are different.
And especially about the fifth root race and fifth world and where we're headed as a species.
Where do you think we're headed? What about these changing times and the prophecies of the great shift? And how does that
so many different prophecies, Patricia. We've got the ones in the Mayan calendar, the Algonquins, and on and on, yugas, and on and on and on.
Right, but one thing is in common is the fifth world.
They're talking about the moving into the fifth world. The only one that does not use that numeral five is the yugas. All the rest do. And they're talking about this very different world we're moving into where polarities begin to unite. We go back to the natural order. And there is a lifting in society of a higher consciousness, a different and higher way of living. But we're moving to a time where polarities either unite, merge together, or we look at polarities very differently. And just look at the new kids. I mean, there was some research done 2 years ago, 42% are bisexual. They look at sex very different than we do, and there's been a rise in births of hermaphrodites, kids being born with both sexes. So we're certainly moving toward that. And
so what do you think, when you talk about these new kids, with all of your experience, I'm sure you are developing some sort of impression as to where are these children are coming from, what level of karmic development is bringing in at this time. What is your take on this?
It's evolution in our times. We are looking at evolution. We are looking at the evolution of the human race, that quantum, that fabled leap, that quantum leap we've all been expecting, and prophesying, it's here, and it's here now.
A whole great spirit on that. Couldn't come at a more important time, I'll tell you.
We're being changed as a species. And if we look at the esoteric traditions of root races and the ancient prophecies about root races, when we're talking about root race, that's R-O-O-T, root meaning foundational. So we're talking about the foundational gene pool. If we look at all of the different traditions and prophecies about this, they talk about a great plan. And that in this great plan, there are to be seven of these leaps in the evolution of the human race. We're now up to number five. I think we're moving a little bit past number five. In other words, the fifth root race is accelerating. And these old traditions talk about there's a change in the body type with each new evolutionary pattern. There's a change in energy of the people in each new change. And you'll love this, Patricia. Each root race has its own Noah, its own Adam, and its own Messiah. So we're moving into the next one. Guess what? I think our new Noah is here now, the one that's going to lead us to a safer and better and just incredible way of living if we listen to his teaching. And yes, I believe he's here. I believe it is a man. I hope you're not talking
about a politician, because I will lose my faith.
The Noah that I believe is here for the fifth root race is Nelson Mandela. And he gave us forgiveness and reconciliation. Without those two traits, the human race will not make it into the fullness of the fifth world.
Well, I get serious validation on that, because I get chills going up and down my body with the mention of the great man Nelson Mandela. So thank you for honoring him in that way.
Well, I truly think he's our Noah.
Good. Well, we want him to be around longer, so let's hope that he is of the 200 to 300 year span lifespan, because we need him. Well, you know, believe it or not, we're just about almost out of time. We're in the no time, moving into the no time anyway, so it's even hard to verbalize that. But
well, you know, we move into the fifth world. We're moving into the element of ether, where
yeah.
the Akashic records are open.
I
totally
knew
open.
I'd get to talking about this stuff.
Yeah, well, you know.
Do you have a message for the audience that's listening to you tonight as a final, not a final, because I'm sure you'll come back. At least we hope you'll be back. But as a final message for your, with regard to the work that you're doing in the, and the message of the book.
Teach the children about silence. Open them to silence. Open them to hugging. Hug your children. Listen to your children. Talk to your children. And let them talk to you. We've got to listen to these kids and be good mentors for them. If we do
Hallelujah.
They'll do it. They'll take
it. I'm so glad you mentioned silence, because this is one of the key things that I do in my work.
They don't know what silence is.
Trying, even adults, trying to get people to just be silent enough to feel and receive instead of the on presence nonstop 24/7.
Right.
Some great wise person, and I don't mean me, said, when you're talking, you're not learning. And I think it was, it might have been the Dalai Lama. But it's wisdom for sure.
Yeah.
And not only the constant talking, but just the buzz.
Right.
We've lost the music to the buzz and the
yes.
hum.
Yes. Yes. It's time to just watch a cloud.
Oh, what a way to close. Thank you, PMH. Atwater, I'm recommending this book wholeheartedly, Beyond the Indigo Children, The New Children, and The Coming of the Fifth World. And we've asked her to come back, and I'm sure she will. We've got a variety of books from this prolific author. So thank you for being with us tonight, and we look forward to having you back.
Thank you, Patricia.
You've been a wonderful guest. Okay, everybody, that's it for today. Tonight, I know I keep getting this mixed up. I'm sure I'd understand that over here in Rome, it's nighttime, so don't think
yeah,
I'm
I know.
Losing my mind.
Over here, it's afternoon.
Yeah. Is it warm and sunny?
Yes, it is.
Well, there you go. Okay, everybody, don't forget, it's Patricia Corey. The show is Beyond the Matrix. My website is SyrianRevelations.net. And I want to thank you all, because I know you're all going out and getting the books. The results are wonderful now that they're available to you. So tell a friend. Also, books with hope, books with a positive message about the transition that we're going through. And next week, I'm going to have Bill Holman with me. He is the new guardian of the Anna Mitchell Hodges skull. We'll be talking again about crystal skull, and my passion for this subject will emerge when we meet again on Beyond the Matrix next Thursday. Thank you, and bye-bye.